Hooked on a feeling.
There you go. You sounded different already. Instead of saying hi or hola,
I thought I would avoid greetings in any language to change things up.
Yeah, nice.
And then you can clearly identify this episode.
Yeah.
From the beginning. Even Barb will be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, that's right. So it's a big football day. We play Philadelphia Eagles and Bats team.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Just after you had some disharmoniousness in your household.
Yeah, that was not good. I needed the Chiefs to lose.
Yeah.
But, oh well.
Yeah. But this is easier. You can easily root against them Bats.
Yeah, easily. That's a crazy division, though. It's like, what team of losers is going to make it to the playoffs?
Yeah. They have it easy sometimes.
Yeah, the Redskins, the Giants, Dallas, and Philadelphia are fighting for the playoffs. With horrible records.
And then whatever team makes it probably just get destroyed in the first round.
True, but there's always a chance, man. That's the beauty of it. That's what I love about like basketball tournaments too. You could be the last place team, and if you show up to play in that tournament,
yep.
You can be in. You're going to be in the NCAA, man.
Yeah, it does seem to happen a lot in the Final Four.
Yeah. You always get one weird team that shouldn't be there.
That one
they usually don't go far, but I think it's a cool concept.
A lot of times it comes down to like an upset in the first round, but it's always a story.
Yeah.
So I don't know if keep an eye out if New Mutant, if you see him sign on. I talked to him about joining us, but I don't think I got a final answer, so I'm not sure if he's.
I put him at the top so I could see him if he comes on.
Well prepared, my friend.
Yeah.
But this is Geek Brunch Retrocast.
A pre-Christmas episode. And when it comes down to think about it, I should have read some Christmas issues. But damn it, I didn't think about it.
Yeah, I'd have to think about what I would actually read. Might have to find something on. I'd have to find something on Marvel Unlimited or something. I don't know.
Comixology, yeah.
Maybe well, this, I have some Christmas episodes in my collection. I don't know.
This back issue magazine number 85 has tons of Christmas issues.
Mm.
So I could have picked any one of them.
Yeah, I could have used that as a resource.
Yeah, Hot Wheels number 6 from 1971. How about that? Jonah Hex number 34 from 1980. Amazing Man Special from 1988. Sergeant Rock and Easy Company from number 414. And Son of Tomahawk number 138. So there's a lot of war ones too, huh?
Yeah.
But there's tons of them, man. You could even read DC Comics Presents number 67, Superman and Santa Claus.
That's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of DC ones. I immediately think of some of the Marvel ones that take place in Christmas. I know there's an issue of Claremont X-Men where it takes place around Christmas. The team's all shopping, I think.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And I know there's a few, I can think of a few Amazing Spider-Man covers that have something to do with Santa or Christmas. Take place around that time.
But there's even Zenoscope Holidays Christmas specials because they have Halloween. So those aren't retro. Some of them might be. I mean, they've been around for quite some time. They almost be hitting that mark.
It's probably got to be kind of close to the deadline.
I would think so.
I don't
I'm gonna
know.
check that out of curiosity because they're way past 100. Come on.
Founded 2005.
Yeah. So they're borderline. Interesting. There's even a
Yeah.
cool Freedom Fighters one. Freedom Fighters number 7 Christmas issue. That would be cool. Justice League of America 110. Captain Atom number 13. This one looks cool. It's a Adventures of Superman issue number 487, where Superman's there and he looks like he's got a drunk Santa there. I don't know. Elvira's Haunted Holidays number 1. Oh, this is cool.
It looks like if you wanted to start covering Grimm Fairy Tales from the beginning, the first issue came out in the summer of 2005, so technically
You could.
you could start from the beginning.
Yeah. There's even
Once.
collector's editions. There's Christmas with the Superheroes. There's a giant superhero holiday grab bag from Marvel Comics. Those big treasury editions. There's a Rudolph. I don't have any of those, though.
And they talk about all this stuff in the issue of back issue.
Yeah.
What issue number was that? Is that the most recent one?
This is number 85, yeah. Luke Cage, number 7.
Nice.
Yeah, this is cool. There's your Marvel Spider-Man ones. There's Amazing Spider-Man 166, Peter Parker, Spider-Man 112. Marvel Team Up number 127 with the Watcher. What were you gonna say?
I was just gonna say, Luke Cage. I've been wanting to go back and read some old Power Man.
Sweet Christmas. Every
Yeah.
issue's a
There you go.
yeah, those are great. I like reading Luke Cage.
Have you seen any Jessica Jones yet?
No, have not.
I don't think it spoils anything just to say that there's a little in joke for anybody that knows the comic history that he actually says "Sweet
Sweet
Christmas."
Christmas.
Yeah. I was explaining to Kara why that was funny.
Yeah.
But they
I
do
look
it.
forward to seeing that. I'm almost caught up on Supergirl, and then I'm going to decide whether to get Hulu for 1 month and just to catch up with Flash and Green Arrow because I lost them.
All
And
right.
I Zombie because those shows I like.
Yeah,
And
one
then
thing to
I'd
keep in
have to
mind with
cram
those.
those in though because it's a 1 free month.
Yeah. Something to keep in mind, though, I don't know how much you lost, that they only have the most 5 recent episodes.
Oh, Hulu?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, it's not the whole season. It's just whatever the most 5 most recent episodes are for CW. It depends on the network and the show. But yeah, for CW, it's only the most 5 most recent.
I'm fucked then.
Yeah. And then they eventually get added to Netflix before the next season starts.
Yeah.
But that'll be a while from, that'll be next, like, end next summer.
Yeah, I might have to wait, but or DVD, get the DVDs or something. I don't know.
Yeah, those usually come out a little bit sooner than Netflix. I've been really falling behind on everything. Just, I find that the week to week, even with having the flexibility of Hulu and stuff, and or having a little bit more flexibility, for me, I like to kind of watch stuff when I'm in the mood for 'em,
Yeah.
and binge on stuff. So I'm always falling behind on things, and feeling like I gotta watch something so I don't fall behind, but
Yeah.
not wanting to.
I might get be caught
But
up on Flash because I think we watched 3 episodes of that, but I watched no Arrow yet. So I don't know what to do. I thought it was all You get everything on
No.
Hulu. Huh.
I mean, they have some shows and some networks have even older shows on there, but it just depends on
But
the
CW doesn't
network and
have
stuff.
everything.
Unless something changed in the last couple of months, they only have like and the five most recent episodes.
Huh.
So I don't know how many I don't know what episode the shows are on at this point.
Yeah,
But
they're
it
probably on
started in like
eight.
October.
They're probably around eight or so.
Yeah. October, November, yeah, it's probably some 8 or 9 or something like that.
Damn it. I waited too fucking long.
Well, you really couldn't control what happened.
Yeah.
The DVR. Well, that stinks. So I think we had a couple questions,
I
or
know we had one.
one maybe.
I'll go dig it
One
up.
is the o loneliest
This
number
number.
that you ever seen.
Norbert. Good old Norbert says, I can't come up with much today. Maybe this one. Are there any brands of soda, cookies, chocolate, or other foods you remember from the 70s and 80s that are no longer made? That's interesting.
That
That are
is
no
interesting.
longer made, because. Oh, huh. Like even the stuff that I remember, like the sodas that were old, you can go to like a soda specialty store and get them. Like they have all of them in glass, like soda bottles.
Yeah, things have gotten a lot more
Yeah, and then
accessible.
even the chocolates and like candy bars that you can't get like at a Target or a grocery store. If you go to like one of those retro candy shops with popcorn and chocolates, they have usually retro candies. So it's like they're still made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you could modify it to talk about those since they're not as easily accessible. I mean, the first couple I thought of, I don't think are. I think you can still get pretty readily, like Big League Chew. I'm pretty sure that's. You can still get that all over.
Yeah,
And
that
Pop
was.
Rocks.
Yeah, I know you can get those. They even have cereal Pop Rocks now, like
Yeah.
Rice Krispie Pop Rock cereal, and
People tried to take down the Pop Rocks with those rumors of people's heads exploding or whatever it was. But it wasn't true.
there's one Hostess cake that I haven't seen made since the dawn of time. They used to have these like semi-circular banana cream. I don't know, cakes, and they were awesome. And I always look for them, but I never ever find them.
Ugh. I don't.
I used to find them like in those Stuckies, you know, like I don't know if you ever heard of those, but they were like stores in the middle of nowhere where you'd gas up and get some treats if you were taking long distance rides. But
I think I've heard of those. I don't think we had them around here, but I've heard of them.
You don't like banana cream?
I've never been a fan of banana really as a flavor. I couldn't even eat a banana, but now if I won't ever go for one really, but I can eat one and stomach it.
Yeah.
But I've never been a big fan of banana
See,
as a flavor.
they have come up with the banana Twinkies, which are close. Like I even found that they're called Banana Dreams from Hostess, but you'll never ever like see these anywhere. They were and the picture's like a horrible one that I googled, because it's one of those small images that doesn't it's not like a good resolution, but that's exactly what I Banana Dream, that's the one that I have gotten the banana Twinkies. They're kind of a replacement, but not quite.
So now you're all set if you want to change your a forum avatar to a banana dream picture.
But there's a dessert here for a banana cream pie Hostess with the mostest, so. We'll have to see if I can make my own.
There you go.
Yeah.
You start a Myers banana dream.
Yeah.
I felt it move.
But like everything that I ate when I was a kid, I still can get for the most part.
Yeah, I can't think of many things I
I wasn't a
like that
fan of like
that
New Coke or Crystal Pepsi and all those weird things.
no. Yeah. I remember those. I never could get into the idea of Crystal Pepsi. For some reason, the idea of a cola that's clear just is gross to me.
Even Sprite?
No, I mean,
Oh, Sprite is called Sprite and 7-Up are kind of
like a,
the
yeah,
uncola.
like a, like I actually mean like the flavor cola, you
Yeah,
know?
yeah.
Like just it's,
Just weird.
the flavor just seems to be associated
Close your
more with
eyes,
the,
man. Close your
yeah, like I
eyes.
said, I could drink it without looking.
Do
That's always dangerous.
they make still make Tab? I don't know that.
I think so.
Yeah.
Oh, did they make, well, yeah, you know, and I think they even brought back Jolt Cola, didn't they? With like the
They
lot of
did. That was a
caffeine
lot
in
of
it.
caffeine. That was a big
Yeah.
cola.
That was a fad though in the 80s.
I used to love like RC Cola, but they still make that Royal Crown. It's just not as
Yeah.
popular and accessible as it used to be. Like you go to the grocery store and it's like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, all of those dominate, and then you see this Royal Crown and it's like two boxes of
Yeah. Yeah, another one like that that I like is Werner's.
I haven't tried that.
That's I don't think they have it everywhere, and I know I'm pretty sure Derek Coward knows about Werner's because I think they had it in have it in his area, and you can't get it at every store, but you can get it. It's like a, it's kind of like a ginger ale, but it's I'd say it has a har even a like a harsher, more gingery taste than regular ginger ale. But my dad always liked it growing when I was growing up, and I'd have it once in a while. So I rarely think of it, but every once in a while, you can still find it around here.
Yeah. One of the things that we used to make as kids was cinnamon sticks. Those ones, I even got busted for selling them in school. They're like, "You're selling cinnamon sticks? You can't do that."
Little entrepreneur. Mike's Comic Book Fund.
They're just toothpicks. You'd soak in s the cinnamon stuff you'd get at the pharmacy,
Oh, yeah.
and they'd provide hours worth of flavor. Whether if it's good for you or not, I don't know, but they were tasty treats.
Couldn't be too bad. I mean, it's just cinnamon. If it's
Yeah.
just cinnamon, that's not too bad. We used to make popsicles, but we'd make our own popsicles out of different stuff because my mom had a plastic popsicle kit,
Yeah.
and it was just like kind of like similar to an ice cube tray, but you put the stick in it. But you could also use reuse sticks from other popsicles.
Yeah.
And then it would just freeze, and so then you could use whatever you wanted, like Kool-Aid or soda or whatever. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah. Chocolates, I don't remember. We had the fake cigarette candies. I think you could still get those at specialty candy shops.
Oh yeah.
We used to think we were a badass, you know, with
Yeah,
those
it had like the powdered sugar on it or
the
whatever that
powdered
people.
sugar cigarettes. So you could like encourage your kids to start early with those and then advance up to a real
That's
cigarette.
so funny. Yeah, I haven't thought about those in a while, but that's pretty funny that they had candies that imitate cigarette smoking cigarettes. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
And you think about it, it's not that long ago. It's not like they didn't know. It's not like it was the 50s where the doctors were smoking cigarettes around their patients. I mean, people were aware of the dangers of cigarettes by the time these were around.
Yeah. It's very different though when I was a kid as far as smoking. Like everywhere you'd go, people would smoke. Like you go shopping and people would be smoking. At any restaurant you go to, people would be smoking. And now, at least in Colorado, there's no smoking places, you know?
Yeah,
Not even
no,
the
it's changed
bars.
a lot.
They have to go outside to smoke.
Yeah.
So I actually like that
Oh, I do
because
too.
I'm not a smoker, and I smoke just it kind of gets me sick.
Me too, yeah. I mean,
So
when,
I
like,
like prefer that, but I remember back in the day, everywhere you went, there'd be smoke, and you'd get used to it, but man, I didn't like it.
yeah, it was like the 80s too.
Yeah.
When they
The only
changed the rules in New York later on with the bars, I was happy about that too.
place I know they haven't really changed are the casinos, like in New Mexico. Like, you go into the casinos and there's smokers everywhere, like on the slot machines and stuff. And then they have like a non-smoking area and they have all the shitty machines, like nobody wants to play.
It's like reverse,
Yeah.
opposite world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the casinos. We have casinos around here, but they have to do a special stipulation. They're all run by Native Americans.
Yeah. That's the they're able to put those on Native
Yeah.
American ground,
Right.
American Indian.
But
But we have them all over New Mexico, and then there must be something weird in Colorado. Like Colorado is not on Native American ground. It's on, I don't know, it's like old mining towns. Like it's weird. They're able to have casinos there. Like over here, they have a Cripple Creek, and then they have another area in Denver that people go to, and they put casinos there. So I don't know what that is, how that's any different than, the other thing, the other stipulation.
yeah. Oh, maybe I don't know. It used to be that way in New York. They might have changed it. Now that I'm thinking about, but I'm not. I don't know. I'm not an expert on casinos.
But
I've only
like,
been in one a couple times in my life.
yeah, I don't like to gamble. Like when I go, it's usually with my family. My family likes it. My mom and dad like it.
Yeah.
Barb's mom and dad like it. So that's usually when we go, like over the
Right.
holidays or something, we'll go by. And sometimes I'll find some games that I enjoy when you get to like bonus rounds and stuff on the slot machines, because they're like video games now,
Yeah.
Some of them are there and they're entertaining. But I don't play the tables much, and that's where, my dad spends a lot of time on the tables. And yeah, I don't know. I never liked it that much. I used to love it as a kid because my parents did drive us from New Mexico to Las Vegas, and we used to stay at Circus Circus, usually in an Apache. They had like a KOA camp on this trip,
Oh,
and
okay.
we wouldn't stay at a hotel, and it was hotter than a motherfucker, man. I mean, I swear to God, being in one of those little pop-up tents kind of thing, or they're campers, but they're pop-up units. They were hotter than hell. It's like 110 in Vegas with
Damn.
no air conditioning.
Damn.
But the thing I remember is my parents used to go gamble like at Circus Circus, and they would leave us, me and my brother and maybe a couple friends would they'd leave us at Circus Circus, and they'd give us like $25 each. And back then, $25, depending on how you spent it, would last a long time. And we would just play at Circus Circus, where they had all kinds of games, and then they had an arcade and everything, and spend the whole day there. And then we'd
Nice.
hang out by the pool and get sunburned.
Yeah, I don't think I've never played any table stuff. A few times I've been in one, just played some slots a little bit, but I never been into the idea of gambling a lot of money.
Yeah.
Just at the most, I'd say, okay, yeah, I'm gonna spend $20 or something, and I'm not really gonna care if I'm gonna win anything or not. I'm just doing it to for my entertainment for the evening or whatever. I remember one time though, I did that. A friend of mine went with two girls, like to Canada. Maybe this was like in my early 20s or something, and I had spent all the money that I planned on spending, and I went and found my friend, and he was ready to go, but he had some quarters left he was trying to get rid of, so he gave me $1 worth of quarters to help him finish him off. And I ended up winning back the $20 I had spent on the last coin I spent. So
Yeah.
I just walked out with the same amount of money I came in with. I was like, that's pretty cool.
I used to have this strategy, and it worked most of the time. As I take this is back when you didn't stick your credit card in the machine, or
Yeah.
you basically had
That's
change. It
dangerous.
was either change or you put a 20 in or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I basically would take a handful of change and stick it in one pocket, and then the other pocket would be for winnings. And I would just check to see like if I would balance off or make money, you know. And
Yeah.
most of the time I'd come out ahead by $1 or two.
Nice.
Yeah. But I never gambled a lot. My best Vegas thing was when I went with IEEE back in my college days. That was the best time I had. Gambling and strip clubs and all that good stuff.
Living
But
it up.
yeah, living it up. The other thing that I've seen they've gamble out east is on the rivers. You know,
Oh,
they have
okay.
like those river boats and shit. So I don't know what that is. It's like if you're on the water, you can gamble, but if you're not on the water, you can't.
Yeah, you're right.
And they'll have some boats like docked on there and stuff.
Yeah, I don't think they do that too much around here. I could be wrong,
I
I
knew
think,
like in
but
St. Louis they do that and a couple other places.
yeah, and like down, it makes it sound, it sounds like almost like a southern thing.
Yeah.
Like maybe around the Carolinas or something. That's probably what Knutson is doing when he doesn't show up to DC Noise.
He's gambling.
He's out on, he's out on a boat with his guys like smoking jacket on and
Yeah, he's actually with Campbell and them. They had a What started off as us talking about foosball, because I still think I could whoop all their asses in foosball. I used to win all kinds of trophies and stuff. And what started off as like that, they said, "Oh, we're gonna play foosball," but I can't go where they are. I'd have to pay for a flight.
yeah, it'd be
It's like just
expensive.
to play foosball for a weekend. I'm not
Right.
that rich. But he was there last night. Knutson, Daryl, Hassan, Campbell, and Tom King. They all had like a guy's night out where they played pool and darts and all kinds of stuff. And they were sending me videos, and Knutson was hammered. I'm
Yeah,
like,
I didn't. I saw a few pictures this morning on Facebook.
I wish I could have been there, but like, if it was a week long thing, it would justify a trip, but if
Yeah.
it's just like a weekend night thing, it's way too much.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, they had a blast.
I thought maybe you were hammered this morning. I saw you're pouring juice on your cereal or
That
something.
was the weirdest shit. I made myself some toast, and I popped it out of the toast, and I went to the fridge to get the butter. And instead of getting the butter, I poured some juice on it. And I'm like, what the fuck made me do that? I was like, Jesus Christ.
Still waking up.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
I've never done that. I think I've accidentally poured half and half on my cereal before instead of
Yeah.
milk, which is, not terrible, but.
I haven't been sleeping good lately, so yesterday I slept too much. Like, I've been having these weird where I go to sleep early, and then I wake up at 2 a.m. and then I read comics till about 4 a.m. and then I go back to sleep. Even on a work night, I'll do that. But it's weird. Last night I remember having like post-apocalyptic dreams. It was very strange.
Too many comics of that genre.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had that kind of too. Actually, last night I slept. I hadn't slept enough the previous few nights, and so last night I woke up for a little bit in the morning early, and I was thinking about getting out of bed, and then I didn't, and ended up falling back to sleep. And I went to bed fairly early too, so I kind of had that too.
Yeah, it was weird. I get up at the crack of dawn and I didn't walk Harley this morning because I didn't want to slip. We got snow yesterday. Usually I pop in on a podcast and I'll go for a walk and take Harley before we podcast, but right now it's too cold and I don't want to slip. Because if it was like Scooter, he was at least towards his senior years, he would walk at such a pace that I could walk him, you know? He didn't pull or anything, but Harley will drag me. Like if I could put on some ice skates and she'd pull me across.
Yeah, we still haven't gotten to see how Mabel does with the snow, 'cause we either have or are getting close to setting a record of the latest measurable snowfall. I mean, I remember you remember
The
last
least,
year.
the least amount, right?
Yeah,
You haven't had anything.
we had maybe a what they call that we haven't had what they call a measurable snowfall. Like we maybe had some stuff that was blowing about.
Yeah.
But that's it. And if we haven't set the record yet, then it's really close to the latest in the calendar year. I mean, it's polar opposite to last year. If you remember, around Thanksgiving, we had the week where we were actually stuck in our house for most of the week. We had so much snow. It was like halfway up the side of the house. And then this year we haven't even had anything yet, so I'm not complaining. It was like 50 degrees out yesterday and today.
Like yesterday, we went to go see The Night Before. It's one of those comedies where three best friends get together because one of the guy's parents died on Christmas Eve, and they go to cheer him up. It's one of those Seth Rogen films. And when we got out, it was like really a lot of snow, and I was like, man, I like to go to my Buffalo Wild Wings, so I was like, damn. And I made the decision not to go because it was so damn cold and it was blowing snow everywhere. And it's a good thing because after we finished eating at the place that was close, to our house, Barb checked, the traffic cams and the roads were all closed on the way. So we would have been
Oh,
stuck there.
damn.
We'd have to walk. We'd have to take other routes that would take
Yeah.
us way out of our way to get home. So they were pretty bad. It was weird because we didn't get a lot of snow, but what did come down, it actually formed a lot of ice. So it was just like
Yeah.
snow and cold temperatures and wind. So
Makes it more dangerous, the ice and stuff, even when you don't have the snow.
yeah. So why don't we kick this bad boy off and talk some comics? Let me check
Yeah,
to see if Alan's around, but
let's get into it.
before we jump into it. Nah, he's not.
Let's get ready to
Ready to rumble.
rumble.
Well, I'll
This
kick this one
contest
off.
is scheduled for one fall.
I'll kick this one off because I read a lot. But I read one. I'll start with the one that I didn't like, and I was surprised because on the other episodes that we recorded, at least one of them, I know I talked about The Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I read like one and two, and I was like so excited to read three because, it started off as one and two. It started off like it was going to be a war. It's like Superman had his, Wonder Woman and others on his side, and Batman had the Atom and some other, Catwoman or Catgirl, whatever you call her, on his side, and Green Arrow and others. It started off like it was going to be that, and then it went crazy, like fucking weird. And it's almost like Frank Miller was in the midst of doing something, maybe like a movie or something, or I don't know what he was going to do. But he almost went into this, to in my opinion, like half ass. It was in 2002, and it's like even the characters that he drew, they had like no detail. Like there was these frog people. I don't know why they were in the story. And then he had these big old splash panels like that looked really cool, but you don't understand like why they were even the story. Like Shazam was like sacrificing himself. And it has some panels that I posted, and it's like, what the fuck just happened? It's like, yeah, I didn't like it, but there was certain parts of the story I liked, but then it would jump around. Like Brainiac was attacking Metropolis, and Superman was trying to rescue Metropolis while his daughter went up to the ship to fight Brainiac, and the Atom was there and helped. He actually helped free Kandor, Kryptonians, and Batman was fighting Lex Luthor, while Lex Luthor was torturing him. And then Green Lantern was off in space, and I don't really know what the fuck he was doing. And then you had like single panels with like Wildcat and Big Barda and Hawk and Dove and Plastic Man, and they just like showed up, and you don't know what they were really fighting or where they were fighting or what was going on. It was really weird.
Yeah,
And
sounds
Derek
like it.
Cowher told me, he's like, I was posting, I post on Facebook. I was like, yeah, this was an awesome issue. I really enjoyed it, blah, blah, blah. And he says, wait till you get to book three. And I was like, I don't always agree with Derek. So I was like, he probably just didn't like it. But I have
Right.
to agree with him. Like, I didn't hate it or I didn't dislike it. I just thought it was a comprehensible story that turned uncomprehensible. And then the parts that I could latch onto, I enjoyed, but they were like not very sequential. It was like if you were like flipping through a book and just reading segments of it. It was weird. But it was Frank Miller and Lynn Varley. And the art was way. Oh, and wait, the villain of the arc, who they made me think it was going to be like a Joker. I almost thought he was doing like what Goth. Have you been watching Gotham or no?
Not lately, no.
Well, Gotham had like a Joker character, and everybody was speculating this guy's the Joker. But what Gotham did that was really masterful is they said that the Joker is not a person. That it's like this, it's almost like this viral thing of crazy that goes from person to person. And I thought that was amazing, and I thought that's what Frank Miller was doing in this book. But then they revealed the villain, and I don't know if I could spoil it. This is from 2002.
For me, I don't. For me, I don't mind. You can, and
Yeah,
I've
this is
given a
spoiler if you don't
warning.
want.
So.
One of the major villains that was going after Catgirl, who was Robin in the first Dark Knight, was Dick Grayson. So. It's like Batman and Dick Grayson fucking hate each other in this book. And it's got weird banter between like Green Arrow and the Question. Like they're always on TV arguing about something. But it's an unusual book. I mean, I'd recommend it. The thing I thought it was going to flow well, 'cause I read the first Dark Knight 3 Master Race, and I thought it was going to flow into that book. And it kind of did, at least from the Atom's perspective and from the Superman's daughter's perspective. But you could have just read book one and two and not read three, and it would have made a lot more sense.
Yeah, maybe that's they decided in putting together the new one to kind of skip over that last issue a little bit or something.
Yeah.
It is kind of telling the way that they've involved Azzarello and stuff with the newer stuff that they don't have as much confidence. I mean, whether it has to do with health or whatever the case may be, I don't think that they have as much confidence in him to not go off the rails
Yeah.
and get kind of crazy.
Well, one thing I was really enjoying and it never finished was All-Star Batman and Robin. Like that was with Jim Lee. I fell in love with that series. It was out there, Chris. I mean, it was a very, very different representation, but the execution of it was like flawless. Like whether you like how they represented Batman or not, the execution was very understandable and it told what they wanted to tell, whether you liked it or not, you know. This one is just like, I would love to podcast with something about this book because maybe there's something I missed, you know. Maybe there's some linkage or some underlying message that I should have gotten but I didn't get. There's always messages in his books about like how he feels about superheroes and stuff, but This one, I don't know. It just went so off the rails.
It sounds like he's lost some of his ability to get those ideas across or to be coherent and communicating the messages clearly. But I mean, I would be surprised if you miss something. It seems like you're running into kind of the consensus. But I wonder if, the difference in what you experience with the first couple of issues is due to the fact that you're giving them a fair chance, whereas other people, I don't know if they read the third issue and then that just colored their opinion about the whole series, or
To
if they
me,
went.
yeah. To me, the first two issues, though, they were in they I w they made me feel like I was in the mood of that book, like what Dark Knight Returns did. So Dark Knight Strikes Again, I felt like I was in that universe, and things were making sense, and they were like a continuation of what happened before. And then this other one just felt like jarring mishmash. It was like Pulp Fiction, but in sequential order. Where I see Pulp Fiction, I love that movie, and that's why I post those fucking John Travolta stupid things that are people annoy the shit out of people. Me and Barb just like will sit there and laugh at those things for like 10 minutes, and I don't know why, but they're hilarious. And then last night, Pulp Fiction came on, and we were like, I want to watch this. That is such a masterful movie. Like, I mean, there's a lot of Quentin Tarantino movies that I love, and I'm gonna go see The Hateful Eight, like, Christmas weekend or whatever. I go see all of Quentin Tarantino's movies, but Pulp Fiction, man, there's just something amazing about the dialogue, and I think. Personally, I think it's John Travolta's best movie ever. Like, his character is just amazing in that movie. I love it so much.
Yeah, it's a really, really well done film.
And Samuel L. Jackson is awesome. Like, the parts that I love the most are the dialogue between John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson. It's just an amazing film.
Yeah, I mean, I think that gave Samuel L. Jackson sort of a new,
Resurgence, yeah. John Travolta too. His career was in the tank.
But, yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to look at Frank Miller's career and where it's gone.
And I've loved his movies like 300 and Sin City. Like, I'll always go see those, and I love the hell out of them. But I went and tried The Spirit, which was his writing and directorial debut. And I didn't like it. And it's weird because I want to watch it again because I like to read The Spirit, It's very pulpy and very stylistic, and I think he got the stylistic part across in the movie. Like, he was trying to do what Eisner did with the different layouts and the way things were presented on the film, but the story just was kind of like not there, It just didn't flow well.
Yeah, I think for a while now, I think Frank Miller's best, like when he has somebody else working with him,
Yeah.
somebody to like take the good ideas and reject the bad ones, I mean, there was a time at which he could kind of work on his own and they could just let him do what he wanted to, back in the day. But it seems like nowadays he's better off if he has some other people working with him.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's see, I'll save my favorite for last. I read the first issue of a miniseries called Detectives Inc. And I had to do a little research after I read it to kind of figure out what the history around this was, but it was put out by Eclipse Comics, and it's by Don McGregor, and the art is by Gene Colan. Don McGregor in this case is the, like, I guess you could say, main creative force, in the sense that it's kind of his creation. There had been a previous miniseries with a different artist. Someone else that's well known. I'm drawing a blank on the name right now, but so he had done that. He had done this, and even made like in the 80s, did kind of like a homemade movie that Don McGregor directed himself. It's never been commercially released, but apparently it's been like shown at comic book conventions and stuff.
Is this the Don McGregor Gene Colan book, or is this the Don McGregor Marshall Rogers book?
There you go, Marshall Rogers. That was the artist I was couldn't think of. Now this is the Gene Colan one.
Okay.
So the same characters, just two different stories, two different miniseries.
Don McGregor's known for Sable too. Like that's his one that I know him from, which is Eclipse.
Which that's also Eclipse. I think I talked about issue number one of Sable at some point. He's also known for Black Panther. So this is interesting because the art is pretty much just pencils. It's got a little bit of it doesn't even really have sepia tones on it, though I think they republished this later with sepia washes added in, and it's they've the story's been treated a couple times too, I think. May have even done some coloration on them also. But this I think was the original publishing in the mid 80s, and it's just pencils. So it has a little bit of a rougher look to it as a result, but Gene Colan's a good artist, of course. But essentially, it's a pretty straightforward private eye story. But the characters are interesting. There's two partners, a white guy and a black guy, Bob Rayner and Ted Denning. And when it starts out, the characters are in different places, and it kind of concurrently shows what's going on with them. Rayner is down like a part of town at a strip club, and his partner Ted's at a totally different part of town at a hospital. And then there's a third character, a woman named Deirdre Stevens, who is approaching a house and goes in, and she talks to a woman there who apparent as we find out that she's this woman, they haven't seen each other in a long time. They know each other a long time ago. And I think they went to school together. And it seems that this woman called her initially out of her concerns about her husband abusing her, but she lost, kind of loses her nerve before she gets a chance to tell Deidre about it and starts downplaying it. But Deidre is a social worker and is really kind of like pushing for her to, not to blame herself and to come out and, tell her the truth about what's going on and everything. While this is going on, we see the one detective, Ted, at the hospital. He's going there because his mom is in the hospital, and he goes there to meet his father. And I enjoyed the rapport that him and his father have. It seems that his father's actually a cartoonist. There's an exchange that they have about, just how he's telling his son how back in the day there was, you wouldn't even think of asking for medical coverage as a cartoonist, and there's really no security in the business. But Ted's mother always supported him and never gave up and didn't want Ted's father to take a lot of shit from the people that he worked for and everything. So it's a nice character building moment. It got me interested in Ted and his family and stuff. And his father seems to be pretty proud of his son and the fact that he's a private eye and stuff. So I got kind of more intrigued by that character. His partner is more of like he seems like he's got less of his life together. Later in the story, when the next day when Ted goes to their office that they share, his partner is sleeping it off from the night before on the couch in their office. And you get kind of the impression they have a interesting relationship, the two of them as partners. And just you kind of get the impression that Bob is going through a rough patch, and he did have sort of a serious relationship that has ended. And after kind of some of that establishing act goes on, we get the two stories sort of coming together where we had already seen Deirdre, the woman that she's trying to help out. Her abusive husband comes home while Deirdre's still there, and there's actually like a physical alteration where the guy hits his wife, knocks her over, and he tries to rough up Deirdre as well, but Deirdre actually has like some self-defense capabilities and stuff, and he's not ready for that. And she gets away, and so then the two stories come together when Deirdre shows up at the office of the two private eyes and tells them that she's been referred to them to look into this issue, and they're kind of like a little hesitant because it seems like a strange case for a woman that's outside of the relationship to hire them without the wife even knowing. It's not like it's a domestic situation. Don't really know what they want them to do, but she tells them that she just wants them to follow the husband for a few days because she thinks that he's being really secretive about this project that he's involved with, and that they might be able to find out something about him on that. And the fact that she's willing to pay them a pretty good sum is kind of the final motivator, because they definitely gets across that that they need the money and stuff. So I liked it. I wasn't blown away by it. I'd be kind of almost sort of.
Did you finish it, or
No, that was just the first
that was
issue.
just the first issue?
Yeah, and I haven't read the rest of it. I do have the other two issues of this. I almost would kind of, I didn't know anything about when I bought these issues. I just found them
The
in a
covers look amazing.
order bin.
Like they're one of those things that,
Yeah.
like, if you at least the first two, the third one cover I'm not crazy about, but the first cover is my favorite.
Yeah, and I almost would prefer. I mean, the raw pencils are neat to look at, but maybe that would be some people's thing. But I almost would prefer if they were
Finished.
sharpened up a little bit. I think they could use being
Inked.
sharpened up a little by some inks, and maybe not. You know,
You should
maybe.
post some just so we can see what you're talking about.
Yeah,
Take
I can
some
do
of the
that.
best looking panels and see if you could post two or three of them just so we get a sense of what you're talking about. Because usually stuff is inked, and
Right.
I'm very curious to see what this looks like.
Yeah, I mean, he does definitely do a lot with variants, and he does a lot with shadowing,
Yeah.
and with variants and with darkness and lightness and making like things look three dimensional. But yeah, I mean, it's well done though, and but there is a little bit of roughness, and there's one panel where the same words are printed twice. Like it's Deirdre that's speaking, and there's two word balloons going to her, like one above her head, one below her head, and they both say the same thing. So there's little things like that that I'm sure they fixed on later printings. But there is actually some back matter that's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 4 or 5 pages. It's a text piece with a whole bunch of pictures from the Detective Inc. movie that they made. If that's interest to anybody, because I think it's just been a couple years before that they made it. So Don McGregor writes it, and he just talks about how it came together, how he decided to do it, and chose this property because it would be something they could do really low budget, as opposed to Saber, where it's futuristic and they would need a budget for special effects and stuff. But yeah, a little extra there, a little extra value. So
That's cool.
yeah, something different.
I have a company that's in that vein, but I've talked about it before. It's Innovations Maze Agency,
Oh, yeah.
special number one. And this one is by Mike W. Barr. He's the writer for all stories. It has four stories, and then it's got art. The first story has art by Joe Staton. The second story has it by Rick Magyar. I don't know who this Rick Magyar is, but I've seen him a lot, and he's my favorite by far. He's very detailed.
Yeah, I know I've heard that name.
Yeah, I think I've seen him on this book, but I'm not 100% sure. And then it had Alan Davis art, so had a lot of
Nice.
artists. And then it had one artist I never heard of, and it was creepy looking. It's Arnold and Jacob Pander. Have you ever heard of the Pander brothers? I think they were big in indie world at one time, but I think these are the Pander brothers.
Yeah,
And
it
they
sounds
have
kind of
like
familiar.
a weird looking, overly exaggerated art style, like something you might see in Mad Magazine or something like that. Like the auteur, if you're reading Oni's auteur, it's kind of like in that vein. But the Maze Agency is basically about this female, Jennifer Maze, who has a detective agency, and then Gabriel Webb, he's like a journalist, and they're dating, except it reminds me of Moonlighting for some reason. But Gabriel Webb, she wants him to join the detective agency, but he's always like, at this point, he's like, doesn't want to join her, even though he helps on all the cases, because he's like, we're in a serious relationship, you know? You'll be my boss, and we might start thinking differently of each other if we started doing that. But anyway, it's like they're working for each other anyway, so on every case. And the interesting thing about these four stories is none of them were people coming into her agency to hire them. They just happened to stumble upon these mysteries, so they didn't get a paycheck for any of them. The first one, some guy, he wants to interview this rich guy, Gabriel does, and the lady doesn't want him in there because he wants to find out if he really murdered his wife. And I guess the landlady's like, you know, we don't need none of this nonsense. He's already been through enough. And the interesting thing is he gets murdered.
Jeez.
And he sees a guy with butt, you know, like an exterminator leave the building at the same time. So he gets murdered, and then they have to uncover the murder of that guy. And everything, of all these murder mysteries, they always give you the obvious character, like that had the motive, and it never turns out to be that person. So yeah, they pointed to the new wife, that she had done the killing, but she's one of those, what do they call that disease, where, or a psychological condition where you can't leave the house, or you're like paranoid. She has like claustrophobia plus that thing that was in that Sigourney Weaver movie with Harry Connick Jr. I can't remember the movie, where she couldn't leave the house. Like she, it was almost like you just get into this fit of terror. She has
Yeah,
that.
like agoraphobia or something, I
Yeah,
think, or
yeah,
yeah.
yeah. And everything pointed that she murdered her husband, and she would never take the elevators or anything, and her husband forced her into the elevator this one time, says, you got to get over this. And that's where he was murdered, and she passed out, so it looked like she had murdered him. But it turned out to be the bug away guy, and they uncovered that. The second story was very interesting because Jennifer Mays was getting a haircut at like this new hairstylist, and the hairstylist, the female Monique, was saying, "Yeah, we're thinking of expanding to a couple other stores, blah blah blah," and she has two other men that cut hair in that boutique. And it looks like one of them she's married to, and the other one she's having an affair with. And they have to solve the murder. They have a mystery about, like, who killed her. And it turns out to be one of the guys. But that was that murder mystery. The story was broken up. It was weird because they, instead of telling the story sequentially, it was like, let's take a pause and let's tell you this Alan Davis story, which was even more interesting. It's like a murder on a plane, you know, and Gabriel and Jennifer are on the plane with this mafia guy, and they were like pointing out all the different characters that these guys belong to, the mafia or whatever. And there's a death in the bathroom, and the main mafia guy dies, and they were trying to uncover who did it, and they're all pointing to one another, and they think it's one of the mafia guys that were trying to kill him for power, either the female or the two other guys that worked for him, but it turned out to be the stewardess. So it's like, it's kind of cool how they re-vector stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the other one was a really weird tale about them getting a coach ride by some really rich guy. And he wants to buy the Maze agency, but when this guy acquires businesses, he takes their name and kind of drags them in a direction that lost their original intent. So he's destroyed a lot of businesses, and he doesn't give a shit. And he's even got a wife that he pretty much bought with money, and he treats her like shit. And he's trying to buy the Maze agency, and during that meal that they're having and drinks with him, they say, "We're not for sale," and he says, "Everything's for sale," but he kills over and dies. And they think it might be the food and it, or some of the lipstick the woman had or something like that. And it turns out to be one of the vendor's stores. One of the vendors that he bought out is now working for him, and he just grown such a hatred for him and what he's done to his restaurant. So, yeah, they were cool stories, and they were all complete, and they were all – short. There were like 8 pages, maybe 9 pages each. Mm-hmm. But they were well told. Like I really enjoyed them. I like That's reading cool. The Maze Agency. I just like to read them in with large gaps in between because they're so formulaic. But they're entertaining.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's like That's an cool. episode of Scooby-Doo.
Nice. Yeah, well, it turns out I'm kind of on a similar theme here because well, I already had Detective Inc. and then I also read the first issue of another miniseries called Scene of the Crime. And this is actually one of the earlier things that Ed Brubaker and Michael Lark did. It was published by Vertigo in 99. And I've read a lot of Ed Brubaker is definitely one of my favorite writers. I'm also a fan of Michael Lark, and I've read a lot of their stuff. But this is an earlier thing that before I found out about either of them. And one of the earlier, I think Ed Brubaker had done several different things in like small press comics and stuff. But this is one of the earlier things that he did that broke them into more mainstream comics.
Yeah, it was before they teamed up for Gotham Central.
Yep, yeah, it's pre-Gotham Central. Yeah. And then actually, it's a 4-issue miniseries. The other 3 issues have Sean Phillips as the inker over Michael Lark. And then, of course, Brubaker and Sean Phillips have gone on to do a lot of work together.
Yeah.
Michael Lark inks his own stuff on this first issue, but then Sean Phillips does the rest. And so in both cases, I mean, I enjoyed this story. In both cases, I would say I could see that this is an earlier work. But to give a brief synopsis, the main character, this is also a private eye story, and the main character is a young private eye. He's a little bit of like a little bit of a slacker. Jack Harriman, his name is. He gets the reaction from a lot of people that they don't like. He doesn't look like a private eye. He doesn't. People don't expect him to be a private eye. And he just looks kind of like a young white guy. He's got a scar across one of his eyes. And as it starts out, a guy, a detective that knew his father, or had actually been his father's partner on the police force, comes up and tells him that he's sending some work his way, and he's kind of surprised because.
There? Hello? Oh, hell.
You lose me?
I did lose you.
Okay. Oh,
That
yeah.
hadn't happened for a while.
Yeah, I'm seeing the notification on Skype now here. All right, so what did you hear last?
You were just talking about the. I think you just finished the last sentence. I only missed like 2 seconds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So basically, Jack, he gets some work from this former partner of his father's, on the police force. We find out a little bit later in the issue that his father, was killed when Jack was like early teen or like 11 or 12 or so. And the woman that comes in, she asks him to find her sister. And because she hasn't heard from her sister in a while, and her sister's a bit of a free spirit, but it's unusual that they've not spoken in a while. And the only lead that she has is that she thinks she might have gone to this Lunar House place. It's like a hippie commune kind of place. So he takes a job. We get a little bit more. There's like a lot of character development, and when I looked into this later, apparently the original plan was to do some more, like a series of mini series. It wasn't necessarily going to be an ongoing, but they're going to do more stories with this character. So there's more, probably more character development of Jack and his situation than you might have if this is only going to be a 4-issue series and then nothing ever again. But it's interesting stuff. I mean, you learn about how he was raised by his uncle, and after his father died, and his uncle is a crime scene photographer, and he joins him on a lot of his stakeouts just to keep him company and stuff. So of course he goes to this commune, and the commune's kind of interesting. Like, he talks to this woman about how, people in the commune, like, they all have sex with each other, and they announce who they're having sex with so that nobody has to wonder. She's like, it's so no one can get jealous. Jealousy comes from your imagination. So apparently, if you know who's having sex with you, you're not going to get jealous. I don't
And
know if
everybody
that
just loves, they're
logic
just
makes sense, but
bunch of gangbangs.
right. But he finds, so the guy that runs the place, he seems to, know more than he's letting on, kind of thing. And so when he leaves, he starts digging through the trash, and he finds a message left by the girl that's missing, with a phone number on it. And he does get briefly chased by one of the dudes at the commune, but the guy can't catch up with him. He's like, "Fuck you fat bastard. Maybe if you smoked a little less pot, you wouldn't be so fucking slow." And then he takes off, but he traces the number to a hotel, and he says, "In my line of work, once you get this close to where the person you're trying to find is, you just hang around and wait since she's not there. So that's when his uncle comes and joins him, and his uncle's happy that they're not waiting for some trucker or something like that to give him a subpoena, that they're actually sitting around waiting for a pretty girl. But yeah, he's heard that this girl, from the person that runs the hotel, that she comes home late and really drunk all the time. And sure enough, that's what's happened. And this guy's with her, and he robs her, tries to rob her as she's passing out in front of her door. She's not doing too well, but they take her into her room and throw her in the shower to wake her up. And he takes her out to coffee, and he kind of hits it off with her. They have like similar personalities, and they kind of like connect a little bit more than he was expecting. But she tells him, you know, she gives him the impression that nothing's really wrong, like she had been saying at that commune for a while, and then things got weird, and she just kind of felt dumb, like staying at a place like that. But apparently when her and her sister were growing up, their father was like a big hippie, and like they actually lived in a commune for a while, and she thinks that she was, you know, her father died also when she was growing up, and she thinks that she was just kind of wrestling with some of those issues. And you know, she'll get in touch with her sister, it's, you know, no big deal. But he gives her card, and he drops her off back at the hotel and stuff, and kind of feels like he almost feels like he's dropping her off after a first date, not after like talking to somebody who's looking for his a job. And and then the cliffhanger, this is just the first issue, the cliffhanger is that the next time he saw her, she was dead. So that obviously continues into the next issues. But almost Ethan, I'm interested in reading the rest of the story. I can tell there. It's a lot wordier than
it took Baker's. A while to read.
Well, yeah, and that's not a problem, but it's like, it's definitely wordier than if you read something by Brubaker now.
Yeah, he's not letting the art tell the whole story, maybe.
Right, and he's actually said as much. I read afterward a little bit about it, and he said that looking back, he can tell that he wasn't comfortable yet, and like trusting the artist and stuff, and
it wasn't into the medium yet where he knew how to mix and match. Plus right. He's so big now that he could control who he wants for these projects.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously like him and Michael Lark worked with each other again later. I think Mark Lark had
Daredevil, parts. Right? Too. I think they did Daredevil run after Bendis.
Yeah. I think Lark, that was Lark. And actually, like, I think Lark had more experience than Brubaker did at this point in comics, but even with his pencils, they're good. I mean, the storytelling is good and stuff, but, like, it's not quite as refined. Like, the look's not quite as refined, and, like, the character faces and stuff. And, like I said, he's got that scar over his eye that's apparent, but I get the impression from the dialogue that happens in the diner between him and the girl that's missing that he's actually got like a glass eye or something. And
yeah.
that wasn't apparent to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not quite like, it looks a little rougher than what I see from Lark later on, but I think it's a decent story even outside of the fact that I was kind of interested in seeing an earlier work from these creators that I have liked their older stuff. Hey, sorry. I've got some animal stuff going on here. Dusty came along and sitting in my lap, and now I think Mabel's getting restless because she wants to go to the bathroom. Now she's
you have to take a break to let her out for a bathroom.
Carol, take her for a walk and shortly. Yeah, she's like obsessed with, oh, Jesus. She's obsessed with smelling his butt.
With the cat, smelling the cat's butt?
The cat's butt, yeah. Like, she'll just get her nose right in there. It's like, and obviously he's not like real comfortable with that.
Yeah, he's not into that.
No.
Not toss my salad. No, he's not. I don't want any of that. I don't want any of it.
So, but that's pretty funny. Like, he's just like, so he'll turn around, start smacking her, and now I'm just rubbing her belly. So she loves that. So she's chilling out. She's funny though.
Yeah,
Yeah, she tends to get like, we can tell that she needs to go to the bathroom because she gets like real rambunctious and won't settle down, you know. But she really likes that. Earlier, I didn't mention it, but earlier she brought me that. She was bringing me a bunch of different toys,
Yeah.
and I'm pretty sure it was in Harley's Bark Box too. That rope with leaves on it. Yeah, she really likes that. She likes playing tug with that.
Harley
That's
gets
another toy
rough
she
with those
brought.
things because she'll get
Yeah.
one end in her mouth and then she just violently swings it, like,
Yeah.
and it knocks shit over everything, you know, like it just goes violent with it.
Yeah, Mabel does that too. She gets it in her mouth and then she'll just shake her head as fast as she can. And
Yeah.
if like if you're nearby, you're like you gotta watch out because it'll like
Yeah.
she'll nail you. Not even
Yep.
need to. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, so Ed Brubaker did work with Michael Lark on Daredevil, just like I
Okay.
thought. Yeah, they did that prison stuff where Matt went to prison after
Yeah, that's right.
Bendis' arc. Yeah.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
So I have two more books, but I'm gonna save the best for last because I was surprised by it. But I read Hawk and Dove number 2, the first volume,
Nice.
and let me see who the creative team. Well, Ditko is the artist, which is
Yeah.
cool. I think it's Steve Skeets is
It
the
sounds right, yeah.
yeah is the writer, and this is titled Jailbreak. And I just recently picked up their first appearance in Showcase, so I have their first appearance. Now I just need to seek out issues 3 and 6, and then I have the full run.
Nice.
Then I have every incarnation of Hawk and Dove except for the Rock and Roll Hawk and Dove, which was in the late 90s, I believe. That sounds familiar.
Switch to a new toy now. It's a little rhino.
Yeah.
It's a new one. She's still
Just
excited about it.
trying to communicate with you. Need to poop. I
Yeah.
heard it. I heard it.
I
It
told her, I
was
said, are you gonna
deep
come
poop.
say hi? Are you gonna come say hi to Harley today? Or so I guess that's part of this too.
Yeah, Harley's upset. She hasn't gone for a walk, so she gets real lazy when I don't walk her. So she loses all her playfulness and
So she
just
goes the
lays
opposite
down.
direction.
Yeah, lays down. She
Yeah, she did.
loses her
She has gone. Like,
energy.
she went out this morning already. She's just like, it's getting near lunchtime walk.
Yeah. So Hawk and Dove, I did pick up their first appearance, and I just need 2 more issues. And this is Don and Hank, and they're really unique brothers because one is blonde and one is got dark hair, and it looks like I don't know where he gets the blonde hair from because the father is kind of like gray haired. And the mother is kind of like a redhead. So I guess if you get gray hair and red, it makes yellow. And then it also makes brown. They're brothers that hate each other. One of them is a passive person, and one of them's an aggressive person. And their personalities collide. The father is a judge, and he's like a hanging judge. He's like brutal to criminals. And Don gets anxious with that a lot because he hears that his father sends somebody to prison and doesn't give him a chance, no sign of parole, and he gets upset. Whereas Hank is actually like they need stiffer sentences. They need to hang him. He's like his angry person. And this story is really weird because there's a prison break, and they're going on a vacation. So the family actually goes on a vacation to the farm where the brother lives, and there's a prison break near there, and these prisoners that break out are pretty violent, but some of them are not. Like, some of them are forced to break out. Like, one guy just wants to serve his time and can't because of this guy will kill him if he doesn't do what he says. And it gets kind of violent because two of the more violent criminals actually go to the farmhouse and they start beating on his mom. And Don is there, and he's the passive one, and he doesn't change. And Hank is just like angrily, like watching. He's like, "This motherfucker! I hate my brother. He's so damn passive." And he just wants to turn in there and kick some ass. But the guy has a gun near his mom, and he's worried that if he breaks in there, that they'll fire the gun and kill his mom. And eventually, they get separated because Hank actually steals the car. And they run outside, and that's where they separate. And Don goes after the really aggressive criminal, and Hank goes after the more passive one. Hank beats the living shit out of the other one. And Don goes after the really aggressive one, and he's like, "Let's talk about this. I'll turn you in to the police, and we'll get you back in prison." And the guy takes advantage of that and starts beating the shit out of Don. And Hank doesn't do anything. He's as Hawk, he's sitting there watching them fight. Because Hank, Don turned to Dove, and he's watching them fight, and he's kind of like rooting for both people. So his own brother is like rooting against his brother. They really don't like each other at all.
Yeah.
And I think like this book only ran 6 issues, and I could see how people like it is very, very different, which is awesome. But it is. I could see how somebody who reads this over and over again might like be, "Man, I don't like to read this because I don't like to read these guys constantly fighting and not liking each other."
Yeah.
And that's what I'm reading here. So Don uses a passive aggressive. He pulls the shirt over the criminal and captures him, and he's pretty beat up. And they end up going back to the farmhouse, and everybody's okay, even the father and the brother who were captured by criminals, but the police come and settle it all. And that's how the issue ends. And it is really cool. Like, the art is very, like, Ditko books, you could tell. And the other thing about Ditko books is whoever letters for Ditko books, the way they write stuff and the captions and stuff. Even like if you read Blue Beetle and Charlton Comics and stuff, it's very similar. So it's like they changed to Ditko's style, and it was a really cool book. I just can't believe that these guys hate each other so much. And Tim Terrell was asking me, this was, he says, "Yeah, I love reading the old Hawk and Dove, but they never really." Between this and Titans, they were in a lot of the books that you're covering, the Titans, and I don't know if it was this prominent in the in a team environment, but in their own series, they pretty much despised each other. And so they were in this book in Teen Titans, and then in Crisis on Infinite Earths, Dawn died and was replaced by a female character. So yeah, it changed dramatically, and he's like, "I man, Tim Terrell was like, I wouldn't have changed, and why did it?" And it's weird because I told him it's probably sales numbers or the fact that these brothers didn't click with readers because they were so over the top hated each other, and they couldn't function even in a fight scene because in some cases. Hank wanted his brother to get beat up so he wouldn't be so damn passive, and there was one time he was just letting his brother get pounded by that criminal, and he was just sitting on the sidelines watching it. And there was a couple panels where he was actually cheering for the other guy. I'm like, what the fuck? This is a criminal who was slapping his mom around with a pistol, like he pistol whipped her. And I don't know. If I was Hank, I would have just opened up a can of whoop ass on that motherfucker and not worried about my brother.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. Came into DC because Dick Giordano got hired over there from Charlton. Or it would have really been, if he had stayed at Charlton, I think it would have been a Charlton book. Which I guess would mean that it would eventually end up at DC anyways, but it just so happened that Giordano got hired there, and Ditko was one of his guys that he brought over. He brought over a lot of talent with him. Same thing with Steve Skeets. But yeah, they kind of came in and out of Titans, which again, I think,
It looks like if you read this thing in terms of lettering, art, and the way it's written, it reads like a Charlton book.
Yeah, I mean,
That
basically, it just
that's
had
why
all
I'm
Charlton
saying it
guys on
looks
it, yeah.
like that style. The whole book
Right.
looks like that.
Yeah, so they did kind of, they obviously didn't have as much of a spotlight on them in Titans books, but yeah, they definitely got the same feeling across, though. Sorry. So, yeah, it's cool to hear about the actual issues because, like you said, I have read and covered all the Titan stuff from that era on Mythmaking, and but I didn't actually I read about those Hawk and Dove issues, but I didn't read the actual issues. So.
Hawk too, like, was upset because his father was watching TV at one point, and the TV was talking about how what he wanted to hear is how Hawk and Dove captured these criminals and put him in jail. But he said these criminals were captured by an unknown people, which we believe was another mafia gang or something taking them out. And Hank is watching this and he's just getting pissed because he's like, I did this all myself. Don, you did nothing and we get no credit. You know, he's like,
Yeah.
and then he's like, we're not heroes to get credit. You know, we're
Yeah.
heroes to help others. So he's like a total like hero mentality. You know, and then Hank is just like this Punisher character. He just wants to
Yeah.
punch him and beat him to pulp.
It's just it's interesting though, 'cause Dove's pacifism was so extreme that he would never accomplish anything. I mean,
Right,
they'd
right.
always end up in these situations as superheroes. Like, it just doesn't mix. Like, no matter what,
Right.
they would end up in situations where they had to fight, and he'd never accomplish anything. And then
You use the
Hawk was
word,
like,
it's to the point of an extreme where, well,
right.
they're both at opposite extremes.
Yeah, which is like
They're
part of the concept,
written,
but.
and they're supposed to find balance in somewhere in the middle, but at least in these early 12 cent issues, you don't find balance, you know. They just
Well,
don't
definitely not.
flow together.
Yeah.
And then their father is more like there wasn't a lot of the mother in here, but the father is more like Hank. Like he's a hanging judge. You know, he's got that mentality to punish him and never let him free. But
Yeah,
then
that's interesting.
he does have a scene in there where that one guy that I told you that broke out because he had to, he actually turns himself in to the judge and says, you know, I only broke out because, you know, they were gonna kill me if I didn't. I wanna turn myself in. And the judge said, you know, I'm going to take this on record and I will try to get you out, you know, out of this situation, you know. So he did have some empathy for this guy. Because this guy just wanted to serve his term, kind of like Nicolas Cage in that movie. What was that airplane movie? I can't remember what it is. What was the Nicolas Cage movie where he's on the plane as a criminal? Con Air. Thank you. God
Oh,
damn, I'm getting so damn old. So yeah, it was a good book. And if you find these hawks and doves, they're very interesting, and there's not a lot of them, so
yeah.
it's an easy run to complete.
Yeah, they wasn't around for too long. Yeah, and there was nothing about their father and the Titans, so that was, I think, I mean, they published those issues of their own title, and then it didn't really work out, so they sort of moved them into Titans at that point to keep the characters around.
Yeah.
But
I'd
so
say the balance is found though when they added the female Hawk and Dove, or you know, when the female became part of the team.
yeah, they.
Because she's not as extreme as Dawn. And I think
Right.
Dawn dies in Crisis because And there was even Armageddon where they were going to turn Hank into the one main villain in Armageddon, the
Right.
Monarch,
Yeah.
and it got leaked. It got leaked early, and so DC switched it to be Captain Atom and pissed off a lot of people. But they were leading it for it to be Hawk because Hawk had this very one-sided vision of justice.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think not only did they replace the character of Dove, they used that as an opportunity to revamp the concept a little bit so it was a little more workable.
Yeah, and the miniseries kicked off Rob Liefeld's career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For better or worse.
Well, he is a millionaire, so.
Yeah,
But
worked out for him.
whatever happens, it worked out for him,
Definitely
regardless
worked
of.
out for him, yeah.
And he, like him or not, he is passionate about comics. You know, whether you hate him or you know, he makes some dumbass statements and stuff, he does
Yeah.
love comics.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my last title is also a mini series. And I mentioned this last time, maybe, or the time before that I had picked this up. It's Slash Marad, issue number
That's a
one.
DC book.
Yes, and it's suggested for mature readers. This would have definitely been a Vertigo title if Vertigo was around, but it was published in 1987, so that was pre-Vertigo by about 5 or 6 years. But it's outside of the regular continuity, but because it's not a Vertigo, because Vertigo wasn't around, it's kind of interesting that it has a Millennium checklist in the front cover next to the Dick Giordano column. Speaking of him, that's about Millennium, but this, has nothing to do with the DC universe. But yeah, it does say suggested for mature readers. It's by Doug Munch and Paul Gulacy.
Didn't you already read this?
I did. I mentioned
Oh, you bought it?
that I bought it, I
'Cause these
think.
covers look familiar to me, like,
Yeah, you're probably looking up what I was talking about. I think
yeah.
at the end of either the end of last episode or the end of the episode before, I'd said that I picked it up and had been wanting to read it, that I would probably cover it. I'm 99% sure that that's the case. This particular issue is called Beautiful Blues, and speaking of post-apocalyptic, this is kind of the case here. And it sort of throws you into the story and explains things as it goes on, but it does it well. You kind of have to roll with it for a little while in the first, I guess, kind of like the first scene of the book,
Yeah.
but it really does explain stuff. But the main character is this guy. He's on a motorcycle that sort of has some like high tech equipment on the dash, and he's going through the wasteland and he sees this guy in a Dodgers hat being attacked by this like dinosaur looking creature. So he goes in there, ends up kind of rescuing the guy, and it's kind of interesting you're trying to figure out what kind of world this is, what's going on. He drives with his motorcycle over top of these mounds in the earth, and by driving over the mounds, it sort of cracks them open, and these green tentacles come out of the mounds, and the tentacles have these little mouths all over them with these sharp teeth, and he leads the dinosaur through that area, this purple dinosaur, and so the tentacles wrap onto the dinosaur and start and take it down and start feeding on it with the little mouths, And then he goes up to it and starts like he chops off one of the tentacles and takes it, and you realize he plans on eating it, or not one of the tentacles, but rather he like chops off like part of the tail of the dinosaur or something, part of the dinosaur. And as you go on in the story, it seems like dinosaur meat is one of the main like sources of meat nowadays, that like most of the cows and stuff have been eaten by the dinosaurs. And the guy that he saves in the Dodgers cap, he ends up joining them at this campfire that they set up, and they have a little bit of a conversation that introduces some concepts that you kind of get a little bit of a sense of the world from their conversation, that there's these some kind of these beings called shapers that the Dodgers hat guy talks about. And he's wondering about this guy on the motorcycle, like what his deal is, like, ask him, you're not one of those humans that are that let the shapers use them for toys, or you're not a dead again earther, are you? Or somebody that worships the shapers, or but you have some shaper gear on you. But I guess you're just like a traveler. And they talk about purple snow and these like dinosaur-like creatures, or see-through trees and acorns that explode when they hit the ground. And it's like, what the hell's going on here, But they don't really get along too well, these two. The guy ends up getting kind of mad at him. He's a little off, this dude in the Dodgers hat. He comes at the other guy with the knife, and the other guy gets him with his own knife before the guy can get too close. And the guy on the motorcycle gets back on his motorcycle and heads to his destination, which turns out to be Vegas. And a lot of the rest of the issue takes place at this club in Vegas, and it has kind of like a caveman theme to it, this club, is kind of interesting. And we finally get introduced to these shapers, which turns out the shapers are aliens, which a few of them come into the club, and you could tell everyone, kind of like all the humans in the club, are aware of the fact that the shapers have shown up. And they're bipedal, like they have two arms and legs, but they're hands just have a couple fingers on them. And then what you can see of them, at least, and this has been kind of foreshadowed by some of the things that have been said, like calling them rugs or fuzzies and stuff earlier in the story, is that their heads are circular, all covered with fur, and they just have these two round black eyes and like this wide mouth. But otherwise they just look this kind of like this furry circle. Getting some more squeaking in the background here. Now it's the like muscle man toy from the first BarkBox that
That's like Carly. She can't, like, you put all the stuff in like this Tupperware like thing to hold all her toys,
Yeah.
and she just will go pick different ones like out of it, and she switches them like every 5 minutes. Like she'll,
Yeah.
okay, I'm gonna play with this one now.
Right. Yeah, she does that too, and we'll kind of we started like keeping her toys up on the shelf, and then we'll have like a few going at a time, and then we'll switch them out, 'cause then like if she hasn't seen a toy in a while, she'll get excited about it like it's a new one. And I guess it seems like it stimulates her, but anyway, I think Kara's getting ready to take her out. She just went running. So, all right. So this fella on the motorcycle, he's Slash Marad, the title character. His real name is Stash Maradovich, and Slash Marad is kind of like his nickname. So Slash comes into town, and he goes to the same club and kind of keeps to himself, hangs out in the background. There's this group of shapers that are there, and he's sort of the shapers, they kind of seem to like use humans how they want to use them. You know, they we get it's clear that they're responsible for the weird things that have happened to the Earth, and for some reason they're hanging out, and it's not clear at first like what the total situation is, but Slash goes in and sits down and waits for this woman to come to the table. That she's also on the cover of issue one. She's got like kind of crazy hair and this bodysuit that has tiger stripes on it. So she comes up to his table as a waitress, and he tells her, like, "I'll just take a drink, and it'll have to be room service." He tells him to try room 201. And he goes up there, and she comes with the drinks. It turns out that she's the one that he came here looking for. Her name's Wild Blue, and she's involved with a group called Xenos, which I'm assuming is short for xenophobes, which I guess in some cases might be considered a negative, but in this case, because the aliens, the Shapers, are not a positive thing for the Earth and for humans, they're like, that's the name that this group has taken on. They're like a resistance group. So through their conversation, it kind of clarifies a lot of what's going on, that the Shapers showed up on Earth and started like their own kind of weird terraforming of it, and the fact that there's dinosaurs, and we get some shots of like New York has been overtaken by a jungle. Chicago is like flooded, that there's just a shot of Chicago, and the water's almost up to the top of the highest skyscrapers, and there's actually a boat like floating through the tops. And like the Midwest is just been overtaken by organic crystal. And these shots are taking sort of from the perspective of some Shapers that are on a ship looking down at the Earth and talking about the Midwest, where everything looks like organic crystals, what the whole Earth is going to look like eventually, because they're sort of waiting out the final stage that's going to be completed in 5 years, and at that point the Earth will no longer be habitable by human beings. But the scientist of the Shapers that goes by the name Dr. X, he apparently, according to Wild Blue at least, he's the one responsible for technology that the Shapers have used to do this to the Earth, and apparently he's reached out to the Xenos because he's kind of like Einstein and the atom bomb. Like he hates what's being done with his technology, and like she makes the point that, you know, there were probably some Germans that, or there were Germans, you know, that didn't follow what the Nazis were doing, and just like that, like there's Shapers who don't approve of what the Shapers have done to the Earth, and it seems like they've done that because of what happened to their own planet. So they found Earth as a suitable place to transform into a place that they could live, but and that's what Dr. X wanted, but he didn't want them to choose a place that they would wipe out the population of that planet. So it's all pretty interesting, and the way that's written, that you kind of ease into finding out what's going on. First, you like are intrigued by this strange world and wondering what's going on, and then, you know, it waits just the right amount of time to start filling in some of the blanks. So the Shapers are also, apparently, it's not, they don't just get their name because of what they're doing to the Earth. They also have shape-shifting properties, and so she reveals to Slash that they think that Dr. X is hiding by looking like a human, like an older white guy. And meanwhile, this was going on. The shapers that we saw on the spaceship show up at the club, and it's kind of a conflict between these two groups of shapers, because the ones that have arrived from the spaceship, they are claiming to be there to relieve command from the group of shapers that we've seen from the beginning in this club, as they've gotten just like too comfortable. But the shapers that are there are making the point, like, you're fresh here. You don't realize how boring it gets eventually when you're just sitting around occupying the earth waiting for the process to be finished. And so that they've taken on like human women and just like basically drinking and partying and like enjoying themselves. And these other shapers that have shown up are like more hardcore, like this is not, this isn't what you're supposed to be doing. And they like shoot and kill some of the humans that the other shapers are hanging out with. So this ruckus is going on down below, and it covers up some of the noise. But Slash figures out that Wild Blue, she's actually a shaper that's transformed itself, and the shapers do seem to have gender, at least of some sort, like might be like a little bit different from ours. But so he catches on to the fact that it's actually a shaper, and attacks her from behind with a bottle, and the shaper reveals herself, and the real Wild Blue breaks out of a closet nearby and helps him fight. So he reunites with the real Wild Blue, and this is after this all kind of happens after he takes a little break to kind of consider whether he'll help the Xenos out or not. Because actually, what the fake Wild Blue is telling him is true. The Xenos do apparently have this connection with Dr. X, and the Xenos trying to pretend to be Wild Blue to try to get information out of Slash. He doesn't really know anything, but what he has decided is that he is going to help out the Xenos, because he tells Wild Blue, the real one, when he rescues her, would you have asked me the same thing to help you out? And she said, hell no, I know what your answer'd be. You're always out for number one, screw the rest, et cetera, et cetera. But then he surprises her by telling her, yeah, I am going to help you. So the last part of the issue, they just kind of have to try to get out of this club alive, as the first problem, where this fight is breaking out down below between the groups of shapers, and they're also some of them are coming upstairs because they heard the ruckus of Slash and Wild Blue fighting with the shaper. So Slash causes an explosion with this device that he has, that he throws out by the shapers coming up the stairs, and shoots the device, causes an explosion, and the floor starts to collapse. And like I said, this club that they're in, it has this like caveman motif, and they have wild animals around, like in cages and stuff. And the last page of the issue, they fall through the floor upstairs and land on top of this cage that has a huge like mutated wild panda bear in it. It's next issue, Pandemonium. But I actually really loved this issue. Paul Galassi's art is really excellent.
Yeah, he's good.
He's really good. It's the world and the premise has just got a really unique look to it. The club, the coloring is really cool. I mean, like the club scenes to simulate sort of like the low light. It's all done in like shade. The coloring is all done in like shades of pinks and reds to simulate the low light. And then it's got a real kind of sharp. I think this is when they were using like the different sort of paper, and so even though this is like an older issue, like printed in 87, it's still its colors are still really vibrant and stuff. But yeah, and the character of Slash, there's like some mystery about his past, and he's got a reputation because he's one of the only, if not the only human that's killed some shapers and lived. But you don't really know what the circumstances are. It's like killed like four or five of them, and other humans seem to know about that, but it's left to fill in. But you get a lot to hook you, and makes me want to read the rest of the story. Unfortunately, in this case, I don't have the other issues. I don't think they're hard
Oh,
to come
that's
by.
odd.
Yeah. But so the one I like the most, I don't have any more issues of, but I'd like to check them out. I think I'll have to buy back issues. I don't think it's been,
Yeah, this should be pretty cheap, like a
but
buck at on my comic shop if you wanted to go that route.
yeah, so that's the good news is that they're cheap. The bad news is like,
Could have sworn I had at least one of these, and I don't. So I don't know what's going on with that.
But
I
yeah,
think.
I mean, if the rest of the story is this quality, I mean, this is definitely something that should be more accessible to people because it's really cool. It
Yeah.
starts off that way at least, so. And I don't think it's ever even been collected. So,
Yeah. And I have to seek that out at some point so I can meet my goal. Actually, two of the ones you mentioned, I don't have any of the scene of crime either. Scene of the crime. I don't have a lot of the Vertigo minis that I
Yeah.
need to get if I want to meet my goal. But the next one was a surprise because I bought a lot of back issues this week. I bought, like I said, the first appearance of Hawk and Dove. I bought the second appearance of Captain Cold, and then I think it's like the fourth or fifth appearance of Captain Cold. And I bought a bunch of Detective Comics from the 50 Cent era, which was roughly 1981, and these were Detective Comics. And I decided to read two of them randomly from the pack. And I had known about this through Wikipedia, and I've even talked about it on other podcasts. But this surprisingly, and I was really surprised and happily surprised, this is the story arc where they introduce Alfred's daughter, which is awesome.
That's
Because
cool.
I've talked about Alfred. Used to have a thing with Mademoiselle Marie, who was a World War II character in the French Resistance in Star Spangled Comics. And she was also in like a lot of GI Combat and the war books. She's a big character. And what they did is they said that Alfred was in British intelligence and he was also in World War II, along with Lucius Fox, which is awesome. So this is Detective Comics 501 and 502. And they basically get mysterious Lucius Fox and Alfred Pennyworth get these mysterious letters, and Bruce notices them, and they basically are very aloft and aloof and not telling him what's going on, and they basically leave for France. And when they do, Bruce is so curious because both of them are affected that he follows them. And as soon as they land, they almost get assassinated and all this. But what it turns out that this the daughter of Mademoiselle Marie has found a little girl who kind of knows the history, and they believe that Alfred killed Mademoiselle Marie because she was shot in the back by somebody. And when I guess when she was recovering, she was brought into this house with her sister, or both her sisters, and healed back to health without any other people knowing. And this little girl saw, and one of the first things she said was Alfred. And when they saved her and they found her, she was found to be pregnant. And they raised the girl on her own as Mademoiselle Marie left mysteriously. So Alfred was there, and he was being held on trial. Along with Lucius Fox. Lucius says, "I'll defend Alfred," because he was like, "I don't think he killed Mademoiselle Marie, and he was just in tears the whole time and didn't want to say a word. And Batman says, "Well, I'll find the killer." So, and in France, he actually found who killed out Mademoiselle Marie, and it was a police officer of the French military in World War II that actually was a Nazi sympathizer that shot her in the back. And the reason she said Alfred was because she was pregnant, and she was pregnant with Alfred's child. And only like two people knew this. One of the French resistance guys and Alfred. And Bruce, now that he did a lot of research, he kind of understands that this is the case. But for some reason, Alfred does not want to tell his daughter that, I'm your father. But he helped pay for a lot of stuff for her when she was younger. But they basically get him off trial as Batman brings this other ex-police force guy into the trial and tries him and finds him guilty. And I think they actually killed him because he tried to shoot them. No, they actually are going to send him to jail. But it was a really cool story arc because I had just, she Julia or whatever her name is, Alfred's daughter is playing a big part of. She was in Batman Eternal and a lot of the Batman books lately. So it's really cool to see this issue. I was like, wow, this is cool. And it read really well. It was by Jerry Conway, who's awesome. And the art was by Don Newton and Dan Adkins. And the covers were by Jim Aparo. And they had backup Batgirl stories. Both of them did. The Batgirl stories was basically her versus Dr. Voodoo. And that was by Kerry Burkett and Jose Delbo. And those were good stories too. At this time, Commissioner Gordon knows his daughter's Batgirl. And she has like alliances with certain people, like this mechanic who always works on her bike. He knows that Barbara Gordon's Batgirl, and Dr. Voodoo actually goes and blows up the bike as he was repairing it, and he gets in the hospital near death, and that's what kicks off this whole series where she's going after Dr. Voodoo, and Dr. Voodoo can't really kill her or put a spell on her because her will is so strong, so he has to make her feel fear and worry and a couple other things before he could put a voodoo hex on her or actually use one of those voodoo dolls on her. And it was a good story. But the whole Lucius Fox and Alfred thing was just awesome. And the French Resistance, there was a lot of war stories, kind of backstories told on that, which was really cool. So Alfred was part of British intelligence that helped the French, and Lucius Fox was part of the U.S. intelligence that was around during that time.
That's cool. I like when Alfred's background is explored and stuff. And I didn't really realize that there was that history with his backstory with his daughter.
Yeah, it's a very small history. And the only reason I knew about it was because when I was reading Batman Eternal and all that stuff, and they had his daughter in it. I went to Wikipedia immediately, and I read the backstory, and I was like, "Wow, that's Mademoiselle Marie," because I've read a lot of Mademoiselle Marie stories in war comics, And I was like, "That's kind of cool," but then I never read that. And one of the interesting things is these books are like dirt cheap. So if she ever makes it as a breakout character at some point, these are going to be pretty valuable books, I would imagine.
Nice.
Yeah, that was cool. Do you have any more?
No, I'm all set. I'm all done.
All right. Well, you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com, and you can leave an iTunes review for us on Geek Brunch Podcast on iTunes, and make sure you put Geek Brunch Podcast on it so you know it's for this one, because there's like three podcasts on that feed right now. And mythmakingetc@gmail.com or mike@comicbooknoise.com. Those are our emails. Twitters at MythMakingETC, at Mike Myers Brunch. And hope you guys have happy holidays. As I think this is it for this year, right?
Probably would end up. Yeah, I'd imagine.
And maybe we could think of something where we could do together over the course of the, you know, next couple weeks.
Yeah,
maybe a comic we could read together, or a movie we could watch, or something like that.
Yeah, I figured we'd end up getting back to doing something together.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll get Alan on the show.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'd like to try to have some more guests in 2016. Have some brunch buddies.
New Year's resolutions.
There you go. That and we'll try to curse more. Be more offensive.
Well, have a good Sunday.
Gain weight. And...
Are you taking any time off, like a week or so, or are you going to work the whole time?
I have like some Fridays off.
Oh, okay.
Just as like
New Year's and Christmas.
No, like in addition to like I have a few days off here and there just because I was hanging on to them just in case, because my sick time comes out of the same.
Same pool.
Yeah, and we can't carry them over, so I usually hang on to a couple of days, and then if I don't use them, I just take them.
Use them all towards the end. You're running out of runway.
Yeah,
you're gonna have to make a decision soon or lose them, right?
Yeah, I have them scheduled. So, yeah, I gotta take them or lose them, and don't want to lose them. That's for sure.
I don't lose any of it. I roll it over, but we don't really get sick leave. It's more built upon overtime kind of thing, but
right, Kara's kind of the same way. She can carry it over, but so.
Yep. All right, well, you have a good weekend, what's left of it, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Alrighty, you do the same.
All right, I'll get those Slash Marad issues for Christmas.
There you go. Yeah,
I know what to get you for Christmas.
Maybe Santa will put them in. That'd be a surprise.
All right, well, take it easy.
Bye-bye. Bye.